Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Halloween Horror Square Table Edition, Part 2, with Annie.
Hey.
Joe.
Hey.
And Ramsey.
Hey.
Do you realize this table isn't square?
Well,
this is a parallelogram, but...
It's a rectangle.
Yeah.
What, isn't every square a rectangle, or is it the other way around?
Every square is a rectangle, but not every rectangle is a square.
Oh, Joe.
Oh, no.
Leave. Go to New York. Go find Noel. You're both dead to me. In a very inventive way, though, I'm going to put
Yeah, if I was dead to you, how would you kill me?
Yes, I would put a pitchfork, but just one tine through your temple.
Okay.
Oh, whoa.
I would bend it out and just insert one tine very gently.
You'd kill me with a square.
Very gently. I like that.
All right, you guys. So we're going to talk this time. Let's just start talking about what we've watched this month, because I put the charge out a few weeks ago to kind of, you know, start watching some slasher picks. And I, as we talked about on the last time, have not seen a ton of these. And so I was able to watch three over the past three nights, a movie called The Burning, which I can't wait to talk about. A little movie called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the first time.
Ooh.
And I think everyone's favorite, The Prowler. But has anyone seen The Burning?
Yeah. I just watched it last week, actually.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah,
I mean, for what it was.
I had very mixed feelings about it. I think I would have had a more pure enjoyment of it if Weinstein's name was not all over the opening credits, which totally gave
it, is there consensual sex in that movie?
Oh, yeah. All the, I mean, obviously, yeah, it's got like people pressuring each other for sex.
Constantly.
Yeah.
You could not help but think of that. It was the very first movie from the Weinstein brothers. Bob wrote it, co-wrote it. Harvey, it was his idea and produced it, and it was the very first Miramax film, I think. And
I think actually one of the allegations against him took place during the filming of that movie.
Yeah, apparently when he was like 28 years old and he was a creep already.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just an old man creep.
So obviously that's a major, like brings a lot of psychic badness to the experience.
For sure.
But if I'd never known about any of that stuff, a lot of it, it could have been a pretty enjoyable slasher experience, especially because it has got the most charming cast. It's got young Jason Alexander,
Holly Hunter,
Fisher Stevens, the guy who plays the bad guy in the 90s movie Hackers.
Yeah, the kid from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
And it was the movie debut of Jason Alexander, Holly Hunter, and Fisher Stevens. And that's important to talk about because a lot of these slasher movies have really bad actors in them. But this one stands above it because they were young, but they were all really fucking good actors.
Oh, yeah.
Like Jason Alexander was great. He was like... It was like having George, like young George with hair up
totally.
He was still Jason Alexander.
He's electric in that movie.
He
Every
really
scene
is good.
He's in is amazing.
And that, I think that makes the difference in the movie for me. Annie, you haven't seen it, but it is about the legend of Cropsey from the New York area, I believe is where Cropsey first popped up. But it, you know, it's the familiar trope of person is killed or something bad happens to them in a prank. And then years later, they come back to take their revenge.
Of course.
So he's like a janitor and some kids at the camp as a prank.
Yeah.
They accidentally they're trying to scare him with like a skull with candles in it.
Right.
But they end up setting fire to his bed. He gets burned nearly to death. And then many years later, he comes back. He gets out of the hospital and he comes back.
That
for
hospital
revenge.
Scene is great too, man. There was so much tension in that.
Oh, yeah.
When he's trying to get the guy to look at the body.
Yeah.
He's like, for 5 minutes, he's going, I've never seen anything like it in all my years.
How many pages of dialogue?
This is going to haunt you till the rest of your life. You gotta
see
this. And that guy was just like, I don't know. He's like, you want to be a doctor? And I was like, the guy's 50 years old.
He's bald.
Is he not a doctor yet?
You know, I will say about
the funny thing is after that, he goes and gets an apartment.
He
murders a prostitute for no apparent reason.
Oh, okay.
Zero reason other than to show like the gardening shears, I think. Like, here's how I'm going to do it. Although, he just used scissors, I think, in the first one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But the special effects was what's his name again, right?
Savini, was it?
I think so.
That would make sense. I mean, it's good special effects, yeah.
Yeah, but I was impressed with the quality of the kills. I just thought the whole movie was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
To be honest, I had never heard of it, and when I posted it on the Movie Crusher or the Movie Crush page, it was like evenly split between people who had never heard of it and people that were like, "Oh man, The Burning, like one of the best."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say about it that actually for me added to the fun when we were watching it at our house is that the secondary cast is lovable, but like the main characters are just kind of dead in the water. But
yeah.
Somehow I love that in slasher when
yeah.
there's like a dopey lug dude sort of at the top of the cast
uh-huh.
who you can just make jokes about the whole movie.
Yeah.
And my review at the end was that the melted guy definitely deserved to kill this guy.
Are you talking about the super rapey? Like
no, the main guy, the good guy in
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, like the soap opera star.
Yeah, he went on to be in soap operas. It turns out he was a kid when he was young, and he was part of the
that was a good twist.
Team of boys that pulled, well, spoiler alert, but
yeah.
I mean, it's a very old
a little
movie.
Too late.
And so he like burned this guy, and you'd expect that he should feel bad about it, but it seems instead like he's been spending this whole time telling stories that explain why, well, that janitor
yeah,
deserved to get
exactly.
burned.
Like spreading the legend that he helped create.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was like, I wanted Cropsey in the end to kill him. But
I did too.
No.
I wondered about
that. The lug won.
I think we can agree that the raft scene is like one of the better horror movie scenes, slasher pick scenes.
I think so, yeah.
That was pretty wonderful.
Oh, the guy got his fingers chopped off. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was Fisher Stevens.
That was Fisher Stevens.
Yeah.
What have you been watching, Annie? What did you do to prepare for this?
Well, I, for the like 2 months, September and October, I just watched horror movies all
really?
The time. Yeah, so it wasn't even an ask for me. Right. I was already doing it.
I was like, wait a minute. We just talked about this 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's how to live.
It's the only way to live. So I have my classics that I always watch, like Halloween, Psycho, Scream 1-3.
Mm-hmm. You know, 2 was here in at Agnes Scott.
I know.
And my wife worked on that.
Oh, well.
Oh, man.
She was the production coordinator.
I love 2.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoy 3, even though it's not that great of a movie, but I love Parker Posey so much. I'm like,
yes!
This is
yeah.
this
yes,
is everything.
For sure.
We just
she
watched.
She's so great in that.
We yeah. watched the first 3 Scream movies again last year, I think, and the shocking thing was how much better 3 was than I remember. 3
yeah.
is really funny.
It's hilarious when they're like doing their little duo trying to get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
Then they meet Carrie Fisher, and Carrie Fisher's
oh,
got such
right.
attitude.
Yeah, yeah. What is it about these movies that you can watch or we can all watch over and over?
I think there's the kind of, for me, there's just this, it helps me get in this Halloween tradition. It's
yeah.
my thing. I get in the mood. I have scenes that I love and I'm looking forward to it.
Uh-huh.
And also, since I said in the last episode, Scream was my first kind of entry
mm-hmm.
into slasher, it just has a special.
It's almost like these are our old friends in some ways.
Yeah, kind of. And like I do love, because as we were talking about in the last one, the final girl, Sydney is one of the first final girls that's kind of more strong. She's stronger
yeah.
in the decisions she makes and in the way that she survives. And there's something about that I just really appreciate. And it's always making fun of all these other movies I've seen.
Yeah.
Which I feel like I'm in on the joke. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. They always do this silly thing.
Neve Campbell's got a great understated performance in those movies.
Like, I agree.
She's, yeah, she does really good with that role. She's got a kind of a knowingness about her where she's kind of one step ahead even of the script. Does
well,
that make sense?
She's smart in the movie. She never comes across as a dumb character.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could go on about those movies forever. But I also watched Hatchet for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Which was not what I was expecting at all.
That's like
the fun
gore
thing
fest,
about
right?
Oh gosh. I feel like horror movies are so interesting when you talk about reviews, Amazon reviews, because most
all
movies
right.
I'm like a 4-star or above, but horror I could be like a 2.5 to a at 5.
Right.
It's hard to say. Hatchet had 4 stars on Amazon. And so I went in with a certain set of expectations and
was it not good?
I think it might be. I just wasn't in that mindset. It, to me,
right.
it was like really bad. Maybe it's enjoyable as a bad horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a thing. We all have acknowledged that horror movies, and especially slasher movies, they're so their own genre that I went back and read a couple of reviews of The Burning and The Prowler, and some people get it and some people don't and say, like, this is terrible. Like, you know, like serious film critics are more apt to say, like, this is awful. And then you go on, like, Den of Geek or Fangoria or something, and people are like, oh, what are you talking about? This is, like, slasher heaven.
I feel like a lot of the – when you read a lot of mainstream critical reviews of slasher movies that are, like, this movie's bad, and then they talk about the ways that it's bad. I just feel like it's, like
– those are the ways that it's good?
It's – well, no. I mean, in a way it is, yeah, if you're, like, looking for laughs. But it's also kind of, like, criticizing a beagle for, like, having bad grammar. You know, you're just, like, totally missing the point. Like,
right.
People don't watch these movies because they're good movies. They're looking for a compelling drama. You know, with a couple of them, there are actual good movie qualities. Mm-hmm. You know, they might be thoughtful. They might be interesting. You feel for the characters and their suspense. But again, like, I feel with, like, you can count those movies on one hand.
Yeah.
There's some kind of other type of experience. Watching a slasher movie is probably more like going to a haunted house.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
It's a more visceral experience, and it's a more social experience, at least for me. I mean, I would almost never watch a slasher movie by myself.
I've had to because Emily doesn't watch these. So the past three nights have been a little weird, you guys. Me out in the darkened living room watching these movies alone.
I'm in the same boat. I'm under my office man cave.
You want to watch it with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, I've done it before and it's way less fun. I mean, I almost never do it. I pretty much, if I'm watching a slasher movie, it's Rachel and me or it's me and some friends.
Right.
That's the only way to do it because they're the kind of movies that you talk over, that you make jokes about while you're watching.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
You rewind the best kills and and talk about those.
Yeah.
If you do that by yourself, it's a little weird.
I'm in the same boat as Joe. I pretty much, if I'm going to watch a slasher flick, it's going to be with friends or anything, you know, that type of an environment. But prepping for this, it was mainly, you know, me just at my computer watching it because Carrie does not watch slasher flicks at all.
Yeah, Emily, I thought I had her last night, and she's like, oh, well, which one are you watching? Because she likes Scream, and she liked Nightmare on Elm Street, but that's kind of where it ends. And I said I was watching a movie called The Prowler, and she just went, nope. But should we talk about The Prowler? Because we all saw that, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. I didn't love it. I thought it was okay. I liked it more afterward upon reflecting on it a little bit more. But I will say that the conceit of a World War II veteran didn't do a lot for me. I wasn't super creeped out, and that's an inherent problem with a slasher pick. If you're really not super scared or creeped out by the killer, then it's not going to add up to a whole lot. And he didn't really creep me out that much.
I mean, I thought the design of the suit was kind of creepy. I don't know.
It was cool. It'd be a good Halloween costume.
Yeah, like the way it's like the collar goes up over the face or something. I mean, again, this goes with the tradition of the masked killer, right? And here the mask was more just kind of like – it was sort of like a hood that was sort of pulled over the face and came up from the collar. And so their outline, the killer's outline as a silhouette was kind of cool. I don't know. It was unique, I thought, in that – it actually made the villain of the story like a troop, you know, a veteran of a war. I mean, it seems like that was a risky move. Normally, you wouldn't think about doing that.
I read about that, too.
Even you'd get criticized.
Yeah, especially when it came out. It was still – that generation was not to be fucked with.
Yeah.
Even in jest. Like, you didn't mess around with the greatest generation like that. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely risky.
That first kill, like, I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, I know I was watching a Tom Savini film, but I double kill pitchfork going right through both of them.
Pretty good.
I was like, wow. So this is
why
what's going
to happen.
Pitchfork,
though? That was never explained. Like, I was
very confused by
this. Yeah, like, he wasn't a farmer.
I had to look up the description afterwards. Like,
did I miss some kind of motive?
He's putting his bayonet in. He's gearing up to go kill people, or prowl, or whatever you want to call it. And then he grabs a pitchfork. I'm like, he has all these World War II knives and stuff.
It should have been all World War II era weapons.
Rachel made the joke that he was, like, part of the 101st Pitchfork Division.
the fighting pitchforks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I thought that was a little weird and didn't really work for me because you can only think of, like, that he just wanted to use a pitchfork, the director.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there was
yeah.
no good reason for it.
Again, I think this might be one of those things that's ultimately dictated by the makeup effects. It's
yeah.
like you try to – you figure out what – makeup effects you can do, and then you work backwards to the set pieces in the film.
Well, that was one of the things that I read about The Prowler was it was designed – the shooting schedule was designed around the effects. Like
right.
they were like, okay, we're shooting this scene today where this person gets pitchforked. So okay, Tom would just say, okay, this is how we're going to structure the shoot is basically structured around all the kills and all that.
That makes sense.
It's kind of like another version of when you'd have like the Canon Films thing where you got a poster before you got a script.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, here's what's on the poster. How can we build a movie around
right.
that? You got Chuck Norris with a machine gun. You got this guy.
Yeah. I did think when we talked about it in the last episode, the knife through the head and then the eyes rolling back, that really added a nice little touch, I
that
think.
That was creepy, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I thought The Prowler, like most slasher movies, it does not really have merits as a drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really it doesn't really have compelling characters. I thought it was a pretty funny experience, and some of the murders in it were shocking.
Yeah.
Again, because the makeup effects were so good, and like so it had that hot and cold showers kind of thing where like there would be scenes with characters acting stupid and there'd be kind of bad acting, and that was funny. And
mm-hmm.
then suddenly you get the knife in the head and the eyes rolling up,
yeah.
and that was like really ugh.
Yeah, the throat cut scene was pretty brutal too, and how long they lingered on it, and like, you know, she was dead, and he was still working that knife, you know, as deep as possible.
Yeah,
that was pretty brutal. the I just wanted to go stay at the Cape May Inn after seeing that house. Like that's where I am
oh,
in
yeah.
life in my late 40s. I was like, man, that place is fantastic.
Oh, look at the design.
It's in Cape May, New Jersey. And I was like, oh, man, you can actually stay there? That's wonderful.
The bathroom in it, I think, it was like the bathroom in the hotel in The Shining. It had that same green color
oh,
on the
yeah.
tile.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite parts, too, was the during the dance when the lady comes in. She's like, by the way, there's a prowler outside.
Yeah.
So let's all just stay in here and keep the party going.
Oh, but dude, that
don't go outside.
Then everyone's like, I'm going outside.
That band in the movie was banging.
They were pretty good.
It was a great.
I was
band.
Wondering who that was.
Yeah.
I meant to look that up. They were not bad. Yeah, that was a pretty funny part. But that's kind of the fun in slasher movies is some of the ridiculous moments like that.
Real quick, Joe brought up, when I know we didn't talk about the last episode, I wanted to bring up was like poster art.
Yeah.
Every slasher film, I mean, I would go into my Blockbuster or movie gallery or wherever I was getting my videos and basically pick slasher flicks or horror flicks based on the poster art alone. I mean, the Prowler's up there definitely, or, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, all those movies. I mean, I think they spent more time on the poster art sometimes and the taglines than anything else.
Oh, I want to ask y'all if you had the same experience I did. So I've talked to my co-host Robert on Stuff to Blow Your Mind and Invention about this. We both had this experience of being young and being too young to rent R-rated horror movies, but just walking back and forth
yeah.
along the horror aisles at the video store.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Looking at all of the VHS box covers and imagining what the movies were from the box covers. Does this happen to you?
Yeah, and there are certain movies when I was young, like – the poster scared me enough
yeah.
that maybe to this day I haven't seen that movie. Actually, Child's Play was a good example of that. I only saw that recently. But the poster scared me so badly when I was a child that I thought about it.
Yeah.
I refused to watch it.
Noel was talking about rewatching that with his daughter and how hysterically not scary it is.
No, not scary, but I was impressed with the doll effect. I was like, hey, I thought it was going to be much
uh-huh.
sillier than it was, perhaps,
uh-huh.
with the effects at least.
Gotcha. But Chucky, they pulled it off?
Yeah, they pulled it off. I thought so.
That's the voice of Brad Dourif, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great character
yeah.
actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anything else in The Prowler? I mean, I'm looking at that face now. It is pretty scary looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was a G.I. Joe-ness about it because I played with those original 11-inch tall G.I. Joes when he was a World War II guy.
Mm.
And I don't know. It just wasn't the scariest
yeah.
killer to me. And the whole Rose thing, like I feel like they tried to introduce a couple of elements, like the major's daughter was the one who was originally killed back in the day.
Mm.
And none of that really felt it felt just sort of like it was thrown in there.
Yep.
It didn't really like impact me as a viewer.
Yeah, that's – I was confused, which is not a good thing.
I was a little confused too. I didn't know if it was just me.
No, I was confused. In fact, the first time I watched that movie, I thought – I clicked out of it because it opens with like a World War II propaganda thing. And I was like, what is this?
Am I watching the right movie?
It was a little weird.
I kind of appreciate what they were trying to do, but yeah, I don't think it worked.
Yeah, I didn't fully get that the Prowler had been broken up with.
Oh,
that's why he wanted to kill everybody.
That was clear to me. Yeah, he was away at war, and his girlfriend sent him a Dear John letter.
Yeah,
and she had a new boyfriend now. And when he came back, he was very mad, and he killed people. And then 30 years later,
he just
killed people again for some reason.
Right, and
it's the first time they had to dance again.
Oh, that's true. It was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how serial killing works, right? You have to wait until that thing happens again, even if it's 50 years later.
Well, that's a thing that would be worth talking about is the idea of motive in slasher movies.
Right.
I mean, how does the idea of motive play into...
It's usually revenge, right?
Yeah.
It often is, but then often... So there are some where it's like a mystery and it's inscrutable and, you know, you don't know until the end and then you find out there's some motivation. There are occasionally some, I think, where there really is no motivation. That makes sense. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's no clear motivation. They're just crazy killers.
Yeah. Did Michael Myers have a motivation?
Yeah,
he's a mystery.
No. That's the thing is like what I was going to say is most of the time there's like the villain is someone who escaped from an insane asylum or something like that. And Michael Myers he goes to his house. Like that's his only connection. He's a kid, kills his sister, goes to an insane asylum, escapes. Goes back because that's his place, and he sees Jamie Lee Curtis dropping off a key or something like that, and then he's like, "Oh, okay, there's my target."
Right. Yeah,
so there is no really connection. Yeah, with
which made it scarier.
Yeah.
Somehow, but usually it's some sort of revenge, or I guess the trope is revenge from being bullied or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's why I like The Burning is because it wasn't just, "Well, let me come back to kill people like you." The big twist again, spoiler. Is that guy was actually one of the ones who was involved in his disfigurement.
Right. Yeah. He fails to kill the guy who deserved to get revenge on and instead just kills a bunch of peripheral people.
Sure.
Right. Or in the case of the Prowler, the reveal that, again, spoilers, that he is the sheriff was really lame, I thought.
It was like a Scooby-Doo moment at the end.
Oh, my God. It was so funny. It's like,
it was the sheriff all along.
Him, huh? Okay.
But there was no setup because, like, who is him? Like,
yeah. He was going fishing, you know? He loves fishing and now he kills people.
Well, the threat to the other police officer was like, I'm going to call the sheriff.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to get the sheriff
I
involved.
I love that the deputy guy or whatever. It was so clearly just – that time in filmmaking where let's just put a sheriff's uniform on someone and that makes them a sheriff. Like this guy so was not a police officer, but I'm wearing the clothes.
Oh, he's like hitting all the girls that are at the dance too.
He's dancing with them. Daytime TV hunk. Yeah. Also a cop.
It's like put him in a brown shirt and that'll do.
My God. His jaw was like a knife.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to say about like on the Prowler is like, one of the things that you'll see in the franchise movies is like, are they dead? Like, is the villain dead?
Yeah,
we haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah.
Last night when I was watching The Prowler and he gets the shotgun, spoiler, shotgun to the face and his head basically Tom Savini's fashion blows and explodes in a million pieces. I was like,
that was great.
He's dead.
Yeah.
He's not coming back.
Well,
from that.
But he also had already been shot though.
Yeah, and stabbed in the back with a pitchfork.
But right.
When they went full scanners on him, you know he's not coming back.
That was pretty great. I have to admit. I wish it would have been a little. It was too quick.
Yeah.
The head explosion.
Yeah. Slowed down.
It was
a little
over
bit.
Before you know it.
Wanted it to linger there.
Yeah. Just a little bit. Uh-huh. But getting back to you're talking about the posters and advertising, it's a good time to talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre because. I'm of the age where I remember when that movie played in theaters. What year did that come out?
I think 1974.
74, yeah.
Right, 74, so I was 3 years old, but it played for many, many years because I remember hearing about this movie and it being such a cultural touchstone as being the scariest thing and the most depraved. Like I heard all these words as a kid and I didn't want anything to do with it. It scared the shit out of me just seeing like the little blips in the trailer. But just seeing it for the first time two nights ago, I can't imagine theater goers in 1974 seeing this fucking movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was not – nothing had ever been done like this, really.
It's still
for
shocking
American
today.
Audiences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It really is. And it, like – it disturbed me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the one that has stayed with me.
It's probably my favorite slasher film, and it is one that I will watch every Halloween. I'll typically go back. The Plaza was playing it last night, and I'd missed it because I was watching The Prowler. And
Not a good trade.
Yeah, not a good trade, but I've seen it in the theater a couple of times. But, yeah, it is definitely something that 'll stick with you. And,
wow.
It is intense, and it's just like I mentioned the last episode, how it opens up. Like, you feel like you are watching a documentary. Like,
yeah.
you get into these people's lives, and you figure out – and there's not a moment in that movie where you're feeling, like, safe or, like, feeling okay.
Or clean.
Or clean. Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it's
definitely.
Such a dirty, dank, sticky, gross movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a movie that I definitely respect. I would count it among the few – slasher movies that I really do think are, you could argue, are very good movies.
Yeah.
Like, I think kind of a brilliant cinematic achievement. But at the same time, I don't know if I want to rewatch it anytime soon.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I definitely respect it. I think it's interesting to think about. But it is a horrifying experience.
Yeah.
Like, I will say the catharsis at the end, I think I already said this once, but it's unlike any other film I can think of. Like, when she escapes in the truck at the end, It feels like, you know, like landing after a jumping out of a plane or something. Like, you just can't believe you made it.
Yeah. You really – I mean, you root – how hard you root for characters to get out of a horror movie is – can ebb and flow. But, boy, you really want her to live
in
this movie.
Yeah. I saw it semi-recently, like maybe for the first time 10 years ago or so. And today, like, I really liked it. I thought it was really good, but it was disturbing, and I felt that, like, dirty. And just the way it's shot, it feels, like, really grainy, and, like, you're in it, and you don't feel safe.
I would definitely watch the older – if you can watch one of the older versions of it, because they cleaned it up, and in cleaning it up, you're just like
–
It lost a lot of that appeal, because I think I watched it on some, like, ratty VHS tape, and so it had, like, the grit – more grit on it, and –
yeah, like you found something you weren't supposed to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
But, like, I get nervous thinking about rewatching it. And I like it, but it was that visceral of an experience that, like, it makes my skin crawl just thinking about watching it again.
Yeah. I mean, Hooper was – he hit on something that no one had quite hit on yet, I think. Part – it wasn't found footage, but it sort of felt like that a little bit with, like, you were talking about, Ramsey, with the documentary-style opening. And it just – I mean, Leatherface – if it was just Leatherface, that movie would have been historic and legendary. But then I didn't know about the third act.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. I just thought it was Leatherface with Chainsaw. And I was watching the movie and I was like, this is scary as shit. Leatherface is really scary. That first kill is so fast and, like – I was like, wow. I was like, that's it.
Where he slams the door.
Heart is dead.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like,
that
this
door
guy's
slam is
done.
The creepiest part. Like, he just shuts the door. Like,
you're not gonna... and just so angry. Like, you could feel the rage.
I
thought that was
do.
The movie. And then that third act is fucking bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, I have chill bumps right now thinking about it. He took it to a level that I didn't, I get how Rob Zombie has, like, how much it's influenced him, like the creepy hillbilly family thing.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, can you imagine being a 13-year-old in 1974 and just being like, hey, this looks good?
Again, 1974, I mean, think about how stagey and hokey even a lot of the great horror films leading up to this point were.
Yeah.
You know, horror films through the 50s and 60s and all, like, you know, the giant bug atomic stuff. And
right.
You know, and so you did have some, I think, you know, creepy stuff in the early 70s. But when that hit, that must have been the level, like, jumping. Like, they were still making the Hammer horror films in 1974 with, like, you know, Christopher Lee and Dracula and all that. And so, like, that level of staginess that most people would associate with horror going to this, like, brutal, realistic feeling, terrible nightmare like Texas Chainsaw, I can't imagine people could have been prepared for it.
It was a game changer.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, even just picking up the hitchhiker guy – that whole sequence had me so on edge because he was so unhinged. And I was just like the whole time, just like, why aren't they stopping and just saying, get out of the van? There's like two guys and the guy in the wheelchair probably could have helped a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, just stop the van and fucking get out. Leave. Like, it shouldn't have gotten to the point where he was cutting his hand.
This actually, though, plays on a great thing in a lot of horror movies and especially in a lot of slasher movies that I think sometimes we overestimate we underestimate the threshold at which we're willing to be rude.
I agree. It's Silence of the Lambs. What does he say? Like, yes. Totally. Comment. Like, yeah. If someone's following too close and he'd rather not say anything,
right.
Be polite.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. This is a tension that, like, I think we're all interested in seeing examples of in film where, like, there's a situation of escalating discomfort where, like, you should be trying to get out of the situation, but you don't want to go overboard.
You don't want to hurt his feelings.
Right. You don't want to overreact and be rude. And, like, that's there are things like that that happen in life. We've got these intense social pressures to not be rude and
especially
overreact.
Women. Yeah. I mean, I'm wearing my favorite murder shirt. Yeah. Karen and Georgia, they are always saying, like, be fucking rude.
Yeah.
Like, do whatever you have to do to keep yourself safe.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, who cares about this dude's feelings?
Well, how many people went and watched this movie and then it was like, I'm never picking up a hitchhiker again, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And that's the time when hitchhiking was like,
Yeah.
I didn't do it because I was three. But it wasn't so far out of the question for, like, regular type people to hitchhike a little bit.
Yeah.
Not after this.
Something I came across last night when I kind of just read up a little bit just to keep it fresh in my mind was, like, the fact is that these people got stranded, ran out of gas, and they went into the house.
Yeah.
They weren't staying in the house, and then so is
no, they weren't like, being chased.
They
or
weren't
anything.
Being chased or anything like that.
Yeah,
so
it's a good point.
Is Leatherface technically in the wrong? Someone comes into
stand your ground.
Yes. Stand my ground.
It's like, an inverse home invasion.
You guys are coming in here
in defense of Leatherface. Right. Oh my god!
Who the hell's this? Hammer the face, closed door, meat hook.
That's the film theory paper. I mean, in defense of Leatherface.
Yeah,
it's Texas. It's his property. They weren't invited.
Oh my god!
If the cops showed up, who would he side with? It's like, well, technically, you guys are on his property.
Yeah. The other thing that really creeped me out was how. Leatherface was just so, like, the way he moved.
Yeah.
He was huge.
Yeah.
And his size was threatening. And just, you know, even at the end when, like, that great last shot when he's just holds the chainsaw up and is just writhing his body, like that little shimmy dance. Ugh. I'm getting chills again. That movie truly disturbed the shit out of me, guys.
Yeah. I would
like, I get it.
I would definitely take the time to look at, like, there's, like, some documentaries out there on the production of that. Like,
I'd love to see that.
Toby Hooper, like, those sounds at the beginning, like, ee!
Yeah.
Like, that's him. He would just sit around and record.
I kept looking for a pig. I was like, where's the pig?
Or something like that. Like, that's all him figuring stuff out. He was, like, trying to make a documentary or he had money from that. And he was just like, okay, I want to do this movie. That dinner table scene. I don't know, like, I just remember that they were shooting for so long and the hitchhiker was like, grandpa, just hit her, like, that is real. Like, he's like to
that
the point.
That was so fucked up.
That's like a 12-hour shoot and him saying, just hit him.
Yeah.
Hit him now. Like, that's all, it's all real for some, not real, but it's like they were pushed to that limit as
he
far
said
as,
the cast was pretty mad at him for a while after
Yeah, like everyone was
movie.
Pissed. Everyone was pissed. And if you listen, like, it doesn't seem like there's an off switch on that hitchhiker character. Like, you see interviews with him. He's that messed up.
Oh, really?
He's not going out killing people or whatever. But he's like, you know, you can definitely see that he's slightly unhinged.
Wow.
And his casting was perfect as far as all the people in that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I thought Grandpa was dead.
Yeah.
At first. I was like, oh, they've got this body up there like Norman Bates style.
Yeah.
Because there was a grandma that was dead, right? Wasn't there like a skeleton too?
So.
Yeah.
But then... I mean, the scene, the finger sucking, it's like, are you, like, what the fuck is going on in Toby Hooper's mind in 1974?
all those set pieces with the skeletons, I think the human bones are obviously fake, but, like, most of them were taxidermied just for, particularly for that set.
And
like,
that room full of feathers
and stuff.
He just, like, really knew how to, like, set a really disturbing scene.
Yeah.
Ugh. I loved it, though. You know, that's like what the great thing about slasher. And does it qualify as a slasher, I guess?
Yeah. Oh, Yeah, I think so. Okay. It is unusual in that it's a mechanized weapon, but yeah.
He said that he saw a chainsaw. I think what was the story? He saw it in a store or something, and thought like that'd be a great way to kill somebody. I'm surprised it hadn't been done yet.
Have you seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
No, that's Dennis Hopper, right?
Yeah, Dennis Hopper has a chainsaw shopping scene in that movie. That
oh, really?
Is unbelievable. It's so good.
Is the movie good?
Actually, I think kind of, yeah. Like, it goes way more for comedy than the first one. It's not a straight horror film. It's more of a comedy horror.
I'd say take all your expectations of Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 1 and throw those out the window because it's more campy and fun. Yeah.
Should we talk a little bit about the role of camp in comedy?
Oh, yeah.
In horror and slasher movies?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's front and center.
It can be. Is it required?
I don't think it's required, but kind of going back to something we said in the first one, I think you said it, Joe, there's this level of discomfort when you're afraid, and that's why a lot of people have that defense mechanism of you laugh when you're nervous. Mm-hmm. And to me, my favorite genres are comedy and horror. And I think it's because there's a level that I love the adrenaline and the release. So I think actually comedy and horror go really well together because especially if they're building a lot of tension and you're watching it in audience, there's just something about having that joke that makes it more acceptable and like, okay, we're safe. Like, it's okay. This is just a movie. We're going to be fine. And some of my favorites are like the ones that make me laugh and purposefully. Like, there is a place for bad ones, but the ones that know, like,
right,
let's add in this element, this funny thing to add, give some release.
Yeah, it's attention. Almost like a bit of a dance, not only with comic relief, but the very classic trope of, you know, you think it's going to be the killer, but it's the boyfriend tapping her on the shoulder.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's that. It can be done poorly, but if you really nail all that stuff, that's what makes them rise to the top, even if it's a B movie.
Cat scares, yeah.
You know, well, yeah.
Cat jumps out of the closet every time.
Cat, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's something to what you're talking about. So I wanted to mention a little bit of a theory that I read about. We talked about this one time on the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast, but about the rise of slasher movies, a possible sort of cultural demand theory is that they sort of come out of the Grand Guignol tradition, which was like, you know, the Grand Guignol Theater in Paris was this place where from the late, like the 1890s to like the 1960s, they would put on these theatrical productions that were these melodramas that were super gory. Like, they'd go out and like source actual animal parts from taxidermists and butchers and stuff. So,
oh, wow.
So you get it, you know, sounding just right when the eyeball gets gouged out and drops on the stage. It's got to bounce right and stuff.
Wow.
And the theory is that those sort of phased in at the same time that public executions were being phased out. And that there's some kind of demand people have to have this like public social experience of seeing violence and gore enacted on people who maybe deserve it or maybe just kind of seem like maybe you just don't like them or something. But when they did the Grand Guignol tradition, they would very often not just show the melodramas with the eyeballs popping out and all of the realistic gore effects. They would alternate back and forth all night with this thing called hot and cold showers where they would show a gory melodrama that was, you know, short and people would get impaled and all this stuff. And then they'd show a farcical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd just go back and forth like that all night.
So a horror movie just came along and did that in a
single
film.
One story, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. There is something deep in all of our brains, I think. It's the same thing that I can't remember. There is a name for it, though, that and I think it's a French name where the like – when you go to a tall building, like thinking about jumping off of it, or for me, and I know I've heard a lot of people echo this, is like when you see a cop and you look down at their gun and you think, I could just grab that really quick.
Yeah.
Like, what is that weird thing in our brains?
Oh, well, this is, again, something that like if you have certain kinds of brain injuries or neurodegenerative diseases that erode the sort of inhibitory functions of I think your frontal lobes mainly, or temporal frontal lobes. But basically, if your brain inhibition regions get damaged or deteriorate over time, a lot of times people will engage in behaviors like jumping out of moving cars, because I think it's the same thing. Like, you get that initial impulse, like, I could just grab a cop's gun.
Right.
I could just jump out of a car. But if you've got your normal inhibitions working, then you're like, okay, no, I'm not going to do that. For some reason, I thought of it, but I'm not going to do it. So I wonder, like, what is the role of that that initial impulse? Like, why do you have that impulse in the first place that has to be inhibited?
And is it tied to wanting to see a public execution, or the modern day version of that, which is watching a slasher movie?
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are fascinated with death, even if we don't want to admit it, or we're always kind of thinking about how will we die, or eventually one day we will die.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, like, as you said, it probably changed how you view these horror movies.
Because I'm closer to death?
Yes. Sorry to say it.
It's okay.
But it's like a way to kind of confront that, but the comedy helps you do it in a way that's less frightening. And I'm also a big believer that horror movies are commentary on what we are afraid of as a society and what we have anxiety around.
Yeah.
And without directly saying, like, you're nervous about women coming to steal your jobs. Like, it. So having that thing that makes you laugh at it is, I think, if you have this tension or anxiety about things that you're not really confronting or you don't really know about, a horror movie is a good way to kind of laugh at it or feel
like
relief
from it.
Like a
safer way?
Yeah.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think you're totally right about, especially when you see these movies coming up in like the 70s, that it's like a huge part of what's going on in slasher movies and what preceded them. I do want to talk about at some point is like Italian giallo movies.
Yeah.
Is this macho kind of anxiety, like male sexual neuroses, fear about women gaining power. I would say in the giallo movies, which are these movies from the 60s and 70s from Italy that are like these murder mysteries where there's a killer with a razor blade and a trench coat and you can't see their face. And they very much are – they sort of, I think, led to the slasher tradition in America. They just emit fumes of frustrated sexual politics from men. They're like simultaneously in awe of and resentful of women's power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just watched Deep Red again
because
you suggested it, and I forgot about the whole like liberated women. We can't work with them. They're terrible.
Right.
That's one I'm going to watch in the next few days, I think.
There's an arm wrestling scene. Yeah. An arm wrestling scene.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it's right there in the movie. The male protagonist is all clearly he's threatened and frustrated by the idea of strong women.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the spin on that movie? Why haven't we seen a slasher movie where the woman is the killer and is just killing the shit out of all like corporate douchebags?
Well, Alice, Sweet Alice was like a movie that came out in the 70s and it was like a little girl. And I started watching that because
Annie's eyes went so wide.
Yeah, I was just like, no, I think it's on Amazon. But it's gruesome. Like it is creepy. It's a little girl who has a mask on who I guess her parents divorced and it just became a broken household, and then she was like fascinated with death and all that. But it's pretty creepy. And then,
is there any revenge involved though?
I haven't got all the way through the film, but like there really is no revenge. It's just like she's a bad kid.
The bad seed.
Yeah.
And
then you have
creepy.
Yeah. Then you got some of the Scream movies where the villain is, I guess her mom comes back, or not her mom, but.
I find most serial killers, female serial killers, are doing it in revenge of their child, usually their son.
Yeah.
They're killing everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because I guess
Pamela Voorhees.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Pamela, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is actually, I'm researching an episode on female serial killers right now, and that is one of the main differences between male serial killers and female serial killers, is that female serial killers are usually doing it to protect children, sympathy, or altruism.
Really?
Yeah, they think they're doing you a favor.
Is this for Sminty?
Yes.
Or Saver?
We're taking a real weird turn on Saver.
When is that episode going to come out?
I think next week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for Halloween.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, you should listen to that. Maybe we should close with some recommendations. Can everyone think of one slasher movie, or maybe just horror in general if you want to go that route, that maybe a little underseen in your opinion that you could turn people on to?
Underseen.
I'll go with The Burning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just that's one of my new favorite horror movies. I'm going to watch it again and again.
Oh, I got to check this out.
It's really fun.
Yeah. Okay.
You'll have thoughts. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a sucker for a summer camp movie of any kind, whether it's Wet Hot American Summer or
The Burning.
You know, so obviously if you're talking about like actually good ones, some of the answers are kind of obvious. Texas Chainsaw, Halloween, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of bad ones that are great, I really love some of the deep Friday the 13th sequels, especially after Jason becomes undead.
Yeah.
Those are just like camp candy, and they are wonderful to behold.
So what number would that start at?
That starts around, well, let's see, 5 is just awful, and it's like it's...
Well, it's not even Jason.
Yeah, yeah. And 5, it's a copycat serial killer. Oh. Spoiler, you find out at the end. It's okay. It's sort of like a Giallo movie. You know, you find out who the killer is at the end when they're unmasked. But like part 6 is campy and hilarious. Part 7 is great. He battles the final girl in part 7 is psychic, and she's got telekinesis powers that uses to battle Jason. Part 8, they go to Manhattan.
Yep.
Those are all campy, amazing classics.
Then he fights Freddy.
I've got a question.
Oh, Freddy versus Jason.
Freddy versus Jason. Yeah.
I need to see all these movies.
That one as much as I like the earlier Friday sequels. But I've got this question about Jason in those movies. They make this big deal about unmasking him at the end of all the movies, even though you already know who he is. I always thought that was funny. Like so in the Giallo movies, they get unmasked so you find their identity out.
Right.
In the Jason movies and in other movies with a masked killer who's already familiar to you, like at the end of Halloween, you know who Michael Myers is.
You want to see their face.
But yeah, the mask always comes off in the final confrontation. Why is that?
Well, see, like in Jason Final Chapter, Zito is like told this is going to be the last Friday the 13th movie, so do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. So he went into it, I'm going to kill the crap out of Jason. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
so they saw his head in half.
Corey Feldman basically shaves his head and then goes after Jason with a machete and just goes to town and chops the crap out of him and unmasks him. Is like, oh, the one thing you haven't seen is Jason's face. And then obviously they show that. And it is brutal. I would put that up there as far as the camp level, because that's when they really brought in, you know, you got Crispin Glover and his dance
Crispin
moves.
Crispin Glover,
yeah. He's like, hey, where's the bottle opener? And he gets stabbed right in the hand with the bottle opener. And then, you know,
there
all
it
the
is.
Other stuff. There it is. Like, if Jason could talk, it's like, oh, yeah.
Friday the 13th Part 4 has maybe the funniest scene in the entire series, and it's just where Crispin Glover dances to this, like, prog rock song. It's unbelievable.
I got a lot of catching up to get to you guys for next time.
One of the very few films that has a Led Zeppelin song, even though it is not played, the guy sings Tangerine in the bathroom in the shower.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Before, you know, Jason just squashes his head.
Did you get night cheesed on that one?
As far as recommendations outside of the ones, I mean, for me, if I saw a slasher flick, it would have to be campy. I don't have this desire really to go back, but I watched Black Christmas leading into this. And Joe, you mentioned off on an email thread, they're like, is there anything joyful about that? No, it is not. But like, what scares me is feeling, you know, the campiness takes me out of the horror. Like, it brings me out like I am watching a cheesy horror movie or a slasher flick or whatever. But like, there's nothing, they don't try to be overly campy in that movie. Obviously, there's stuff that is, but it's.
So is it scary?
It's scary. I mean, movies like that creep me out. Like, seeing, like, can I be in that situation? Like, the villain, I mean, if you guys.
I'm going to watch it tonight or tomorrow.
It definitely creeps me out. As far as, like, that and, like, the original Amityville horror, those type of films where, you know, I had a Christian background when I was a kid. upbringing and all that. And like those movies, Amityville Horror, Exorcist, those movies will like
– yeah.
I will go back and watch those occasionally, but I stay away from them because I know it'll put me back in that place where I feel
right.
vulnerable and I feel scared.
Because Satan like, was the scariest of
he
all.
He was the scariest.
Dude, I am right there with you. The scariest thing ever to me actually was demon possession.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I was younger because I was a church kid too. And I'm like, oh man, that scared the crap out of me.
Those freaking Left Behind movies, man. If you want to watch something scary where the freaking guillotine, they just start guillotining people like crazy.
Is that a verb, guillotining?
I don't know, man.
It is now, man.
You know what scared me when I was a kid was not monsters. Satan certainly did. But not monsters or stuff like that. It was a human being coming into my house.
Sure.
Like that's what's – and I didn't watch a lot of these. It's funny. Maybe it was just the unknown. But like my nightmares were someone coming through my bedroom window to kill me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't not a monster. It was like a man.
Right.
I agree that's usually scarier. Though I will say it's funny that you had me on here to talk about slashers. I would say – overall, I really prefer supernatural horror to slasher movies. Like my favorite kinds of horror movies are like good monsters and ghosts.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
The remake of Maniac. I don't know if you've seen that.
No.
Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
I was going to see that because I read about it recently that the entire movie is POV.
It is.
I heard it's really pretty fucked up and disconcerting.
Yeah, you don't see Elijah Wood as the villain, and it's from his point of view, and you see his reflection in mirrors and stuff like that, but it's all from his point of view. And the 1980 version is good as well, but that movie – I walked away like I don't think there, as far as I can remember, there isn't any camp at all, but it freaked the hell out of me. I was like, this is, you know, Elijah Wood nailed it as far as what he did in it. And it was definitely, definitely creepy.
Maniac the remake. What about you, Annie?
Well, if you're looking for something that's kind of more fun, then definitely Scream and Cabin in the Woods, The Final Girls. There's actually a movie called that. I like Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something terrible, but you want to see a hilarious ending in Jack Black with dreadlocks, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
Which includes one of my favorite endings ever because, spoiler, like the killer apparently should have been obvious based on his name the whole time. And I love how at the end when they reveal it, they do it in a way like, you dummy, didn't you realize? Like, his name was
Mr.
Benson.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, his name was Jimmy Slasher or something like that.
No, no. So that's why it's funny is because, I was supposed to get it because it's the son of Ben from the first movie.
Oh, okay.
That's hilarious.
Ben's
son.
Does Freddie Prinze Jr. come back in the second one?
He does.
Oh, boy.
And they definitely set it up in a way where you're supposed to think it's him, which I really appreciate because you never think it's – they didn't succeed in that.
That guy is just perpetually a deer in headlights.
Yeah.
Freddie Prinze. Wide eyes throughout those movies. He's, the surprise never stops.
Yeah, he's just constantly like, I'm here.
I got to see those too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, you guys. I feel like we could do like four more of these and have a good time. But two is going to have to do it for this year. I think we should all close out by saying a curse word because none of you are cursing. You're allowed to on the show. I've been cursing. So, Annie, let's hear one.
Fuck.
All right. Joe.
Bastard.
All right. Ramsey.
Horseshit.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Good way to finish it out. And we will see everyone next Halloween. And let's just keep these roundtables going. This is a lot of fun.
Awesome.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.